This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a chance here that we just can't take for granted. When Paul Allen announced that his RV Petrel team had discovered yet another sunken World War II ship, the cruiser USS Helena, it was powerful enough to look at those photos from more than half a mile below the surface and to hear the Helena service record from World War II. But 96-year-old Ski Bernacki of Jamestown, California, adds so much more to our understanding because he was there. A shellman assigned to one of the Helena's 5-inch 38 gun mounts, he had survived Pearl Harbor aboard that ship, not to mention all the other significant battles that preceded her sinking. And he is one of our last living links to this historic ship's legacy. When we left off, he had shared one incident that could be interpreted in retrospect as foreshadowing. When the Helena picked up survivors of the sunken carrier USS Wasp in September 1942.
Next thing that I can remember is in October, the first battle at Cape Esperance, we opened up in a night battle. All these battles took place at night.
Sometimes like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cape Esperance, we used our searchlights, which was a no-no. And then some of the guys up on the searchlight, we got hit in the stacks.
You said you turned the searchlights on, and maybe some people aren't connecting the dots. The reason that was a bad idea is now the Japanese know where you are.
Yeah, exposed yourself, see?
And then you guys got hit.
Yeah. The next battle, night engagement we were in was the Battle of Guadalcanal. It lasted for 3 days. We went in with a bunch of troop ships to land on Guadalcanal. That was in the afternoon. What I remember about, we got a warning that the Japanese Air Force was coming down from, I think, Munda or someplace up north. And so they took the troop ships and moved them out of the slot. And we just waited for them to come in. There was 13 of us ships that day. 5 cruisers and 8 destroyers, 10 cans. When they came in, I think we shot down 32 of them, something like that. And I think we were credited with 5 of them. After that, we hung around because we heard the Japanese fleet was coming down that night. I don't know how many ships we fought against that night. And that's when the Atlanta and the Juno, the Atlanta got sunk. The Juno, which had the 5 Sullivan brothers on it, and the San Francisco got hit real bad. And we were on our way back to Espirito Santo after the battle, and we run into a nest of submarines, I guess it was. They fired, and I heard that the torpedo went by us and hit the Juno, and the Juno just disintegrated.
Uh-huh.
Part of the Juno, I understand, the hull flew through the air and hit the San Francisco. And I think our captain was reprimanded, is that the word, for not sticking around, which would have been stupid. He says, yeah, let's get the heck out of here, you know.
And you mentioned the Sullivan brothers. But so then, on the Juno, there were 5 of them. They all died.
That has
become a kind of a legendary thing in the armed forces. They named a ship after the Sullivan brothers, but they changed the policy.
Yeah, not to have too many brothers or relatives on the same ship.
Right.
I think our ship radioed, and they sent a search plane of, you know, Catalina flying boats, PBYs, back there to see what was still left.
And all this is happening, and you still think you're invincible?
Yes, I'm still here, aren't I?
Was there ever a point where that air of invincibility was rocked a little bit, where you started to think, you know, something like this could claim my life?
No, honestly, no. I took it day by day, you might say.
Well, I guess that's our backdrop then for July of 1943 in the Kula Gulf.
We bombarded that day, and then that night we were supposed to stop 10 destroyers from landing their troops. We had expended our armor piercing, and all we had left was bombardment ammunition that night. Flashless powder, you can't see it. The other powder.
The only powder you had was the one that was real obvious and visible.
That's what I'm trying to say,
yeah.
So when we got into the Battle of Kula Gulf, we started firing and we exposed ourselves with all this light, you know. We sunk a couple of ships. And then we got hit. The first hit, it took the bow completely off. And I think we were doing 15, 20 knots, something like that. And being inside the mount, I don't see what's going on. You know, all I could do is feel things. Of course, we had a light inside the mount. uh-huh. to see what we were doing. When we got hit in the bow, we got blown off, the ship just started quivering and shuddering from the motion of going forward. And then when we lay dead in the water, we got hit with two more. But right in the spot where we had been hit in Pearl Harbor.
Same spot.
Yeah, between the engine room and fire room of midships. All the lights went out. The gun captain says, abandon ship. So we got outside the mount, I did, and I reached for my life jacket, which was outside. You didn't wear your life jacket inside. No life jacket. So I got down and coming out of the light into the dark, you could hardly see anything real good, you know. So I got down on my hands and knees, and the teak wood decks were crackling. And next thing I know, I was in the water. And I looked up, and I could see a silhouette of the two stacks kind of bending together. And I thought, I better get away from here. I was told, get away from the side of a ship if it's going down, because it might suck you underwater, you know. I swam away from the side of the ship, no life jacket. I looked around, what the heck am I going to do here, you know? Still looking around, and all of a sudden I found a life raft. And I was really tired by then.
I bet.
From swimming. So I put my arms inside of the bales of line outside the life rings. You couldn't get inside because that was reserved for the wounded and stuff. So I hung there for a while, and then all of a sudden, here comes a life jacket, a Mae West. I put that on. Got that on. I tied
it just floated right to you.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was just floating around.
Uh-huh.
And then I found a pneumatic life jacket, which fitted around your waist, and used the CO2 bottle. I tried to put that on to have it inflate, but it was dead, so I just blew it up manually. So I had a life jacket around my gut, a pneumatic life jacket, and it made West. So then that's when I was comfortable being alongside, outside the life raft. And then I looked over and I saw, which I thought was a silhouette. So I said, I wonder what the hell that is. So I swam over that way. I didn't know whether it was Jap or what, but as I got close to it, it was the Radford. So as I got close to it to get aboard, the ship got underway, because the battle was still taking place.
Yeah.
And so it got underway, and here I am, you know, by myself out there in the water again. So I'm swimming around, and here comes the Nicholas. Fortunate enough, I got the head cargo nets over the side. I grabbed the cargo net, got on, and held on for dear life. I climbed up and got up underneath the torpedo tubes. The ship got underway and went down the other end of the harbor, still during the battle. I was close enough to where I saw the torpedo tube move when they shot it out. Anyway, the battle was still going on, and what I remember about the whole thing is it was loaded with crude oil, and the eyes burning, skin burning and stuff.
You were covered with oil from being in the water all that time.
Yeah, all that crude oil and stuff. They sent us down to the engine room. We got some of that light diesel, and that's what we cleaned off and took as good a shower as we could. And they gave us clothes, you know, dungarees and stuff, so we'd have something to wear. And as we pulled into Tulagi, it seemed like everybody on the shoreline and the ships and all, everybody got out and gave us a welcome and a salute, you know. And then they transferred me to the Honolulu with a bunch of guys. And then we got underway and went down to Espirito Santo. And I stayed there with the 3rd Special Sea Beach Battalion till we got orders to come back to the States. And I think put us on the Lew Wallace, a Liberty ship. It was only built to make one trip. And coming back to the States, you could actually look out from inside the ship through the hull when the ship moved. You could see the daylight outside.
You weren't sure you were going to make it on that thing,
Oh, well, everybody was so happy. We had card games going, and everybody was trying to make a buck, you know.
So that night, Kula Gulf, how long were you in the water?
I keep telling myself 2 hours, but I don't think I was in there that long.
Somewhere between 1 and 2.
Yeah, you can't judge time. Oh, here's another thing. I after it got sunk, you know, here I am in the water, and the first thing come to my mind is, what the hell is my mother going to say about this? Yeah, because in Pearl Harbor, they didn't notify. At first, I was missing, you know, and they notified her back east in Massachusetts.
So she got a telegram saying your son is missing after the attack on Pearl
Harbor.
Yeah,
and then found out that I was still around. While I was in the water and I was swimming around, the first thing I thought about is I kicked my shoes off. I had my socks on. So here my paddling my feet, and they filled up, the socks filled up with water, and I, first thing come to my mind is, boy, that thing looks like lures. I hope them sharks don't think the same thing.
Yeah. With white socks kicking
yeah,
around?
Yeah, white socks, yeah.
Did you see any sharks anywhere?
No. Good. No, but it was on my mind.
Sure. You know, maybe this is a dumb question, or maybe you've never considered it before, but had that Mae West not floated by, or the life jacket not floated by, do you think the outcome would have been any different?
Only the guy upstairs knows. It wasn't my time, I guess.
Because you were already pretty exhausted.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. When I swimming without a life jacket, the water wasn't really rough, but it was rough enough to where it took a little effort. And then all this stuff going through your mind, you can't see. What the hell happened? You know, where's the ship? A lot of things went through my mind.
You mentioned your eyes burning, too, from getting oil and stuff.
Yeah, that crude oil is just like, almost like tar, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, real heavy, heavy crude.
This is a serious nightmare that you're living in.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything that went through your mind during that time?
Goofy things.
Yeah?
Where the hell's my wristwatch?
Maybe God didn't want you to know how long you were in the water.
That, and like I told you, what's my mom going to say about this? You know?
What did she say about it?
She was just happy that, because when I come back to the States, I went on survivor's leave and spent 30 days there. And then I came back to San Francisco and I went over to TI there, and I was going to be assigned to the Reno.
Hmm.
And I just come right out and told him, I says, you assigned me to Reno, I'm going over the hill. I'm not going aboard one of the AA cruises. The guy saw that Juno blow.
Mm-hmm.
That scared the hell out of me. So they put me on the next best thing, a minesweeper.
That's not dangerous.
Yeah, so then I went to the Santa Barbara State College, had a course in minesweeping there, and then Long Beach, Terminal Island. And at that time, Robert Montgomery was in charge down there, the actor.
Yeah?
Yeah, and then I went up to Portland, Oregon, and I picked up the caravan, AM-157.
So you mentioned coming home on survivor's leave. And the whole point of that is you've survived something. You've been through something that other guys did not survive. When did you find out about how many of your crewmates died, and were there any of your friends that went down with the ship?
When the Helena was sunk, there was a number of guys that got picked up by the destroyers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a bunch of guys that clung to the bow of the Helena.
Right.
And then there was some guys that were in mortar launches and stuff. And I think there was 100-some-odd guys that ended up on one of the islands over there. There's a long story about that, the rescue of them guys on that island.
Did you know any of the guys that died when the Helena sank?
Oh, yeah, Albanese. I think there was about 8 or 10 guys that I went through boot camp with.
Mm. Well, and I guess the implication is that could have been you.
I guess, yeah, but like I say, it just wasn't my time. That guy upstairs had controls.
Do you ever think about that? I mean, you think about meeting your wife, having children. I see grandchildren in Air Force uniforms on the wall over here. None of them would have ever been born.
That's right, yeah. Like I say, yeah, I had my day. I was married twice, and then 48 years, Ellie and I were together, never had an argument, just best thing ever happened to me.
And none of that would have ever happened.
Yeah.
Guys were killed on your ship at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
A lot of them killed at Kula Gulf.
Yeah.
You had to survive in the water, had that Mae West show up, the life jacket show up.
The Nicholas was my baby.
A lot of things had to go just right for you.
They did.
When you think back on that, what do you think was the closest call or the most amazing thing that you endured?
I really can't pinpoint on it. And I just think that I was lucky. Lucky as heck. I'm fortunate that I can remember a lot of this stuff at my age.
You really are. 75 years ago, the rallying cry was, remember Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, that's another thing. You don't hear that very much.
No, we don't.
No, you don't.
But when you say it, it means something.
To me, it does, really. When I think that people don't remember, it kind of upsets me.
What should we remember? For people that weren't alive then, that didn't experience it the way you did, what do we need to remember?
People have short memories. they're already forgetting 9/11.
Yeah.
They're already forgetting that.
So what is the lesson of Pearl Harbor? What can we take? What should we remember?
Remember, Pearl Harbor, what happened and why it happened. You weren't alert.
One of the enduring images of Pearl Harbor, well, there's a few of them, but they involve the Stars and Stripes. You know, that Remember Pearl Harbor poster that went all over the country in the wake of the attack had a tattered flag flying among the smoke. Hickam Field had that flag on the pole. It's one of the most famous photos there. When you look at the flag now, what does it mean to you?
That the population of the United States should have more respect for it, for one thing, and everybody should try to get into service and serve the country, man and woman. I don't go along with the idea of them being on the same ship together, because that could be awful distracting.
You saying you would have been distracted if you had women on your ship?
You better bet you. You better bet you. And even at this age, I'm not too behind schedule, I think.
There's something else that I want to say. I need to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling your story. Is there something that you would say you're most proud of?
That I was a member of the armed forces, the Navy, and the best ship I ever served on was the Helena. A lot of friends I made in the Navy, and the result of being in the Navy, I have a lot of friends now.
And he's made some new friends just in the last year or two because of some pretty incredible adventures he's been fortunate enough to experience. We're going to explore more of that with 96-year-old Ski Bernacki of Jamestown, California, when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses going to your heart, you just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.